What's up, everyone? Welcome to the MMA Kill Shot podcast from DFS Army. We got UFC Noche. It is Mexican Independence Day, and we got Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko 2 for the UFC women's flyweight title. I'm Sniper alongside Monk. We got 11 fights on this card. We are going to talk bets. We're going to talk DraftKings, especially Monk's going to break down all of the numbers for you guys on DraftKings. Do me a favor, smash that like button for me, subscribe to the channel, drop in the comments who your favorite fighter on the card is. We're going to talk about all the fights, odds, DraftKings, all the good stuff. Again, we got 11, so you know, with a couple cancellations, this was looking like 10, so thank goodness we got back to 11. And honestly, not my favorite card. I'm not the type of guy who's, fucking fights, terrible card, worst ever. Like, I like fights, so I'll watch it. I'm going to watch it regardless. It feels a little soft for a title fight card, but it is what it is. A couple good spots, a couple things for me to yell about. Monk, anything you're looking forward to in this card?
Yeah, happy to be here as usual. A couple of good fights. You know, this one does seem soft on paper, but in what, 2 or 3 weeks, we've got Grant Dawson versus Bobby Green headliner. And then follow that up with like Ketlin Vieira as a headliner against some. So we might be yearning for the days of the Noche UFC card, that's for sure. But we will see a couple interesting matchups here. So I'm looking forward to it.
We're in a stretch of like, I think Anik said it, and I knew it. I should forget. It's like a UFC event every week for like 20 weeks. We're like week 17, wild. 18 or something.
Yeah, we something have one like next that. Week, and then I think we have a week off. Thank God.
Yeah, I could. Use a nice little rest. Although I'm sure that week I'll be like, man, no fights.
Yeah. Shit. For me, I'll be like, oh, I don't have to spend 6 hours editing. Sweet.
I'll end up go watching LFA or ACB or something anyway. Right. They have a problem. All right. That being said, I think that's enough intro. Let's get into the fights. We got Alexa Grasso. If you don't know, you should know. She is the UFC flyweight championship with one of the ugliest belts I've ever seen in my life. As you can see pictured there, she's taking on Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko's still the favorite. She's minus 175, 8,500 on DraftKings. Grasso is 7,700. And on DraftKings, plus 145 on the comeback. I'm going to take this one first because I talked about this fight in particular on the Sharp app betting YouTube channel. So go and subscribe to that. Search it, Sharp app. I gave out my three favorite bets for the card. I'll give away one right now, though. I did bet Valentina Shevchenko. She was minus 600 in the first fight. We're getting a $4 discount. And in a fight, she was clearly up 2-1, pretty clearly. Got caught with a spinning attack. I'm not saying Alexa Grasso isn't good. She took advantage of the situation and got the win. Props to her in a rematch. And I know everyone's like, well, champions typically don't fare well in the rematches. I get it. All that is true. I still think there's value in this minus 175. You got on the feet. You saw Shevchenko she wasn't dominant, but she was winning the exchanges. She won round 2 and 3. That Muay Thai style against the more of a boxing style usually pays off. Valentina Shevchenko made her reads, kind of downloaded the information, and was looking good in that fight. And more often than not, Shevchenko is going to be the better grappler. She's stronger. She's more likely to get top control and pound away on Grasso. Not that Grasso can't do it. Clearly she can. She's a champion for a reason. I don't want to sound like I'm taking too much away from Alexa Grasso. But all the stylistic advantages that made Valentina Shevchenko minus 600 in the first fight apply to her at minus 175. They're still there. It wasn't some dominant win. So I like the price. On DraftKings, you get 5 rounds to work with at discounted salaries. Sign me up for that shit. I mean, I like the stack and cash games for sure, especially this week. While I'm picking a few dogs, a lot of them are really low floor dogs. So cash games, I can't imagine I won't be stacking it up. Make sure you're a DFS Army member because I'm going to go over cash game lineup construction with the VIPs in a show in Discord tomorrow. So again, those links are down there in the description. Make sure you sign up for that. And we'll talk more about construction tomorrow. But even if Grasso wins, the way this card is, I don't know, like 5 rounds, yeah, she'll probably pay off and be close. But if it's a high scoring night, she will make the optimal. It kind of depends how many dogs come through and at what scores. But she's not a lock in a win the way I think this fight goes down. the cheapest we've gotten Shevchenko. I'm sure Monk will go through what her average salary was, but this is a super discount on Valentina. It's hard for me not to be all over the Bullet. And I should say, I'm not a Bullet fanboy. She actually annoys the shit out of me. The dancing and like it's never been my thing. She's just a great fighter, and that doesn't change here. So Shevchenko for me, pretty strong stance. Monk, what do you got for us for the main event for UFC Noche?
Yeah, same thing here. I'm bucking the trends, all the trends about 35-year-old champions fighting younger and going back and getting your belt back. I think Shevchenko, I mean, it's just what you said here, man. We're getting a huge, huge discount. Excuse me, on her at 8,500. I mean, come on. And you alluded to it. You knew right where I was going, man. Her last five fights, Jennifer Meyer, she was 9,600. Andrade, 95. Murphy, 95. Santos, 96. And Grasso, 94. And now she's $8,500. Dude, if she would have gotten that win, if she didn't, you know, get submitted in that one, she already had, 80 points. She would have probably scored 90 plus the bonus point. She would have had over 120 points. She put up 115 against Santos, 108, 140 against Andrade, 134 against Valentina Shevchenko has one of the highest DraftKings upsides on the entire card. Hoping this goes to decision because she's going to score all the points. And I really don't mind a main event stack either. It's a little bit, it's not too expensive, actually. Grasso was 6,800 last time, so you are paying 700 up. You really never want to do that. But she scored 50 points without the bonus by the end of the fourth round. So she might have scored 60 other than that. And, you know, 60 in a loss is pretty good at 7,700. So I don't know if she'll guaranteed make the optimal lineup in a high-scoring loss or even a low-scoring win. But I love this fight for DraftKings, but I definitely favor the Bullet here for her DraftKings upside. I mean, Grasso rarely, well, she put up 120 against Wood, almost 100 against Arajo, but 70 and 80 in her two fights before that. So a bit more inconsistent than Shevchenko is.
I was racking on this card a little bit, obviously, at the start, but there's actually a lot of good talking points as we talk through the fights. I think that holds pretty true here with our co-main event. Again, I guess the quote-unquote A-side, Kevin Holland is the underdog. He's plus 125 and 7,900 on DraftKings. Jack Della Maddalena, minus 145, 8,300 on DraftKings. We have to talk about the stylistic matchup. We have to talk about what Della Maddalena, how bad he looked against Hafez last time out. Lots to talk about here. Monk, what do you got?
I'll let you handle the stylistic matchup for the most part here, but for Maddalena, yeah, he did kind of get exposed, you know, at least one part of his game in the Basil Hafez fight, but we do have to remember he just turned 27 like 4 days ago, so still an extremely young fighter, and as we know, young fighters tend to improve greatly between fights, especially if they are fully committed and training. So you hope for the past 6 weeks or so, Maddalena's done nothing but train for submission defense and takedown defense.
Every time he was defending takedowns in the room and he grabbed a guillotine, hope somebody smacked him in the fucking head.
Yeah, or every shocked time. Him with one of the a cattle prod or something. Yeah, stop absolutely. Because if he goes gilly for against Kevin Holland, man, that's not going to end well for the most part. He needs to keep this one standing. Kevin Holland, clear path to victory, in my opinion, with the takedowns and whatnot. Now, the big elephant in the room is Kevin Holland's lack of fight IQ. What are we expect? Like, we expect him to wrestle. Same with a fight that we'll talk about later. I won't, you know, get into it now, but I'm sure you could guess if you thought pretty hard. But if we knew Kevin Holland was going to go for takedowns and going to go for submissions, ground game, I'd put him in like 90% of my lineups probably, but we don't know that. And much like Valentina Shevchenko, we're probably, especially if he wins, we're likely never going to see JDM at 83, a price this low ever again, 8,300. I mean, his average salary, he was 97. He was the most expensive salary last week or last time, 92 before that, 96 before that. I mean, he was 82 against Ramazan Ameev in his second ever fight, but yeah, we'll likely never see him this low again. So I think there's value on both sides. I love this fight for DraftKings. Maybe it's because I'm a fanboy, but I'm just ever so slightly leading Maddalena. I love both guys. I don't really care who wins because I'm a fan of both. I'm leaning Maddalena just for the DraftKings upside because Holland, you know, in over his last five, his wins, he's averaging just 88 points. So give me the upside of Maddalena.
That really is the problem here. What is Kevin Holland going to do? I don't even think it's fight IQ. I think he wants to be exciting, and it's what he likes to do. He likes to stand and bang. Like he just submitted Michael Chiesa, but Again, Chiesa shot takedowns. And I've said it so many times, and I'll keep saying it, Kevin Holland is a Travis Luter black belt. That means something. He is a good grappler. His defensive wrestling and get-up game, questionable. Big difference between grappling and BJJ and wrestling. However, in this matchup, based on what we just saw, you would think if he wants to get Della Maddalena down, he can. Will he go that route, or will he stand and trade? And then it's a pretty close fight, and I edge Della Maddalena because of the power. I think he's a little bit cleaner on the feet. I think Holland's more dynamic, probably, but Della Maddalena's got bigger power and is more technical. That's kind of that stylistic breakdown, and I would lean towards JDM. And you're right. Della Maddalena is also at the age where he can make improvements. So for those reasons, I'm kind of leading Della Maddalena as well. But don't get it twisted. This is a play both sides in GPP type of fight because Della Maddalena can get a finish. I would actually go so far as to say I think Holland's the better DraftKings play. Because if he wins, it's because all of a sudden he's decided he wants to wrestle. I think there's upside on both of these guys. They're in the mid-range. I have to lean JDM for the pick because until Holland chooses to wrestle, I can't assume he's going to do it in a breakdown. The man fell in mount against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and was like, oh, my bad, and stood up. Like, I mean, I love watching Kevin Holland fight. It's fun. If he chooses not to, well, you know, anybody who picked him or those are my strong lineups, I'm going to be mad, but it's going to be fun. So it's hard to hate on the guy too much. Let's move on to the most protected man on the roster. Raul Rosas Jr. He's minus 800, 9,600 on DraftKings. Terrence Mitchell, plus 550, 6,600 on DraftKings. This is out of the UFC playbook. Holy shit, our big star just lost. Let's get him a win.
Yep.
Terrence Mitchell is not good. He beats up cans in Alaska, and when he doesn't, he gets finished. He's got an aggressive fight style. He had that early takedown against Cameron Simon, but so I will give him that. He's fun. He's aggressive. He goes forward. Not afraid. Just not a high-level fighter, and there's nothing wrong with that. Just Raul Rosas Jr. is also going to have a big grappling advantage. There's a hole there. We've seen Mitchell submitted. Like, it's a setting up for a Raul Rosas Jr. win. The problem is the salary. I still think he could pay it off because there's not a ton up in this high range that I'm dying to play. So he probably is the best of these high-priced fighters we're going to talk about. And other than that, I don't want to overanalyze this fight too much. Rosas Jr. should smash him. And if he doesn't, the UFC spent a lot of money on something that's not going to work out. But again, Rosas Jr. is going to wear the sombrero, always wears the sombrero coming out. It's UFC Noche. Bounce back performance for how old is he now? Is he 14 yet? It's the youngest kid with the biggest head in the UFC. And I don't mean that in terms of like he's conceited. I mean like physically, the dude's head is enormous, like bananas. So he is the pick. Monk, who you got?
Yeah, same. I don't need to spend a ton of time here. It's clear that everyone wants Rosas to win. I mean, by everyone, I mean the people that put this fight together. You said it best. It's a bounce back fight. Terrence Mitchell poses basically no threat. The only question for me is he going to score enough to pay off this salary? I also don't like a lot of the people on the high end, it seems. So we're in agreement there. I mean, I guess I'm not going to fade him per se, but I'm not going to go out of my way to get him in a ton of lineups. I will be interested to see what his ownership is going to be at the highest salary. But yeah, I mean, he could just land one takedown, and if it takes him longer than a minute, one takedown and submission doesn't really score you that many points. So if you think he lands a takedown or two, then that might be enough to do it. Or if he gets it done in the first minute, then put him in. But yeah, I'm going to wait and see what ownerships are, but I don't think the Tear Bear is his nickname. Stands much of a chance here against Rosas Jr. I expect a first round finish, possibly the first minute.
That better rank real low on your unnamed nickname podcast.
Oh, it's I think it's the pleasure man of the week.
Hey now.
No, yeah, I haven't. Yeah. We haven't talked about it yet, but yeah, that was a big one for me. Big one
that
for
was,
me.
Tyson good. Yeah, Pedro. Tyson Pedro coming through. I still like the pleasure man nickname.
I would never have lived it down. I would never have lived it down if you
would have been bad.
I'm happy.
All right, let's move on to a fight that I think I can admit is giving me some fits here. We got Zell Huber against Christos Giagos. Zell Huber's minus 265. Comeback on Giagos plus 225. Zell Huber's 8,800 on DraftKings. Giagos is 7,400. Monk, I think you're up first for this one, so it'll allow me to gather my thoughts for a minute. Who you got?
Yeah, I'm just not impressed, less than impressed, you could say, with Mr. Zell Huber. He lost his first match, his first fight, I should say, to Trey Ogden when he was supposed to win. I think he was 9,400 that week, minus 430 favorite.
He no-showed.
Total no-show. Decision. Total no-show. And then you can argue, did he show or not against Lando Venata, because he got the win, but he only scored 75 points. And I know Venata's, you know, probably a tough out. But, you know, Christos Giagos, I think, stands a chance. I think in a card full of favorites for me, Giagos is definitely an underdog I'm willing to roster at 7,400. Yes, he's been finished in 7 of his 10 losses. Excuse me. I was trying to avoid doing that for the past 35 seconds. But, yeah, he has been finished in 7 of his 10 losses. But he does have a couple of round one finishes as well. Has a decent last 5 strength of schedule. And he's actually coming in under his average salary of $7,500. So his takedown defense leaves a lot to be desired, and so does his inside-the-distance pacing. But we shouldn't have to worry about that too much with Daniel Zell Huber. So I don't want to – I'm not going to be looking to roster Zell Huber at 8,800 a ton. I'm going to have some of him because, as I said, Giagos does get finished a ton. But Zell Huber has yet to prove that. He's still very young, and, you know, obviously he's not Raul Rosas young, but he's 24 years old. Giagos, 33, been in the UFC forever, 12 UFC fights, and I think he stands a chance. I'm interested to hear what you have to say because – this is one dog I am going to be rostering this week.
Yeah, I'm going with Giagos as the straight up pick. And it's mostly because I can't get a good handle on Zell Huber. Don't know who he is. He's a decent striker. He's no show. It's not high volume. Giagos is going to come out aggressive and he can grapple. The problem on Giagos always has been his gas tank. This is now his second stint in the UFC. It'll be really dangerous the first couple of rounds. Unlike much like another dog and we're going to talk about later. Doesn't fall off quite as bad, but again, has always talked. We talk about managing his gas tank, and on the feet, Zell Huber is going to be better. Giagos needs to grapple. The problem is that the most exhausting thing in MMA is grappling. So, and it's why I'm back and forth. And what it really comes down to is I am leaning that way just in terms of the straight pick, because I think he can get inside. I think he can do enough to either get this up to the ground and get a finish, or win the first round and a half, and hold on down the stretch. I don't see Zell Huber being a crazy finisher. So that's the straight up pick. But I think on DraftKings, I think Giagos is clearly the play. I know Giagos has been finished, but Zell Huber just doesn't seem to be that put away style, unless he looks completely different than he has his first two UFC fights. I'm going to be under on Zell Huber. There's other favorites up in that range I would rather take a shot on. It's too expensive for me. And Giagos, if he wins, I think will smash with the grappling upside, his pressure style early. Maybe he lands something. I think he's got a higher ceiling than Zell Huber, even though he is the dog. We're moving on to Fernando Padilla taking on Kyle Nelson. Padilla is a minus 250 favorite. He's 8,900 on DraftKings, whereas Kyle Nelson is plus 205, 7,300 on DraftKings. I think many people have been tempted to pick Kyle Nelson. I am not one of them. And he is a tough out, I will say. This fight has a little bit higher of an inside the distance prop than I would have thought. I just think Padilla is too quick, too technical on the feet. I don't think Nelson's going to be able to clinch or get him down. I think on the feet, he's just going to be chasing Padilla around the cage for 3 rounds or until he eats a big shot and goes down. I think he's going to be trying to close the distance. I think Nelson has decent fight IQ. I think he's going to know what he needs to do. I just don't think he's going to be able to execute. The speed of Padilla is going to be the big X factor here. In terms of a finish, I mean, the odds indicate more finish upside than I gave it when I was breaking this fight down. I looked at the odds after I did my tape and I went, really? Okay, it was like minus 500, something really high. May have not been quite that high. Wait, I have it open. Oh, excuse me. Minus 220. That was still really high to me. Like, I was expecting minus like 130, 150. Minus 220 is, and minus 250 at some books. So I'll go with Padilla. I think he's too technical, too good. Kyle Nelson, I'll play a little. He's not my least favorite dog on the card, but he's nowhere near a priority. Monk.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to playing Kyle Nelson pretty much at all, so I'll probably avoid that for the most part. I'm a big Fernando Padilla guy here. I think he's going to do pretty well here. I mean, we have a potential, just like you said, of Nelson just trying to walk him down and just taking shot after shot. We could see, you know, a little backup jab drop here in this fight. I think if it gets extended into the later second or early third round, Padilla looked great against DeRosa, but you kind of got to throw that out because everyone generally looks good against DeRosa. He has no chin whatsoever. And Padilla was 7,400 that week, got it done in less than 2 minutes. So now much higher salary than his previous fight, as you would imagine, at 8,900. But he did make the optimal lineup, and I think he has a chance to do it again. I don't put much faith in Kyle Nelson as a fighter overall. In fact, only his last his only two wins in the UFC, I think, Marco Polo Reyes. I mean, how long has it been since that guy was in the UFC? And Blake Builder, who's only had two fights, and Nelson kind of scraped by, according to the stats, by the skin of his teeth there, just outstriking Builder by about 14 strikes. And that was really about it as far as the fight. So give me the upside of Padilla. If this goes to decision, I might regret that, but I still like Padilla in cash. Maybe a little bit of Nelson in GPPs, but I like Fernando overall.
Fernando. I'll stop. Sorry, guys. Moving on, we got Lupe Godinez. He's minus 425, 9,400 on DraftKings. Elyse Reed, plus 325, 6,800 on DraftKings. I legitimately cannot wait to hear the stats for this fight because they're going to be hilarious. Monk, what do you got?
Well, if you want to know one, you just call it out, because I'm not playing any part of Reed at all for any tournament.
That's not why. I want you to go over the takedown and takedown defense numbers because they should be comical.
Oh, Elyse Reed's takedown defense. She's 50%, giving up 14 of 28 in her career. Over three takedowns takedowns landed on her per 15 minutes. It's ridiculous. She's getting outpaced 3-1 inside the distance. And now we've got Lupe Godinez here. Very good takedown accuracy, over 3.5 takedowns per 15 minutes. Let's all talk about her takedown accuracy. But she just hasn't done it. She landed, 13 takedowns against Carnelosi and Loma Lugbunmi. Then she landed one against Hill.
She's going all Kevin Holland on us.
That is where I was going with this. Exactly. Another fighter. This is who I alluded to earlier when I was talking about Holland. If I knew Lupe Godinez was going to wrestle, I'd put her literally in every 100% of lineups, because she put up 130 against Carnelosi. Elyse Reed must have like a white belt in jiu-jitsu or something. I think we were talking about it last night. She's a nothing ground game. She would get smashed, either subbed out or absolutely manhandled or womanhandled, I guess, as the case were, for 15 entire minutes and score a million points either way. But we don't know that. So Lupe is going to be too expensive for me this week. I will have some of her roster, but I'm not going to be the field. I assume the field's going to be extremely high on her. If I knew she was going to wrestle, I would obviously play her, but I just don't know that. And I don't want to be out in the cold when, she put up 66 against Calvillo. She put up 85 against Lugbunmi, and that was when she landed five takedowns, 85 points, and she put up 88 against Dakota. Neither of those are going to get it done at 9,400. So this is a real gamble on Lupe Godinez this week. But yeah, I hate Elyse Reed in all formats.
Yeah, that's really what this comes down to, is that I don't think Reed can stop a takedown. Yeah, do we have to worry about Godinez actually doing it? Sure. I think she will. The matchup is good. She's so aggressive that I think that she's going to move forward and end up in the clinch at least, because I don't think Reed is going to meet her in the middle. I think as long as Godinez either looks for a takedown or has halfway decent footwork, I think she'll find them at some point on top. I think she's going to beat Reed up. Like, I can't get behind any Elyse Reed. There was a fight relatively recently that I was very wrong on Elyse Reed. What was it?
I kept thinking it was her that made the optimal in her last fight, but I was confusing her with JJ Aldrich.
Yeah, but Elyse Reed was the minus 330 favorite against Corey McKenna, who she won via split decision. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Yeah. No, she beat Jin Yu Frey by decision. Oh, that's right. She choked out Loma Lugbunmi, but
yeah. Ooh, Elyse Reed.
Yeah. That's why I was like,
I think she got choked out by Loma Lugbunmi. That was Loma's first.
Oh, no, that's right. No, I have that flipped. Yeah. So again, anywhere on the ground, like, just get it there, Lupe. Just get the fight there and we're good. So I'll be under an Elyse Reed, even at a dog shit salary, and just be saving my money for other underdogs.
Yep.
Other underdogs like Josh Fremm. Yeah. I am on a fucking island this week.
Yeah.
Roman Kopylov's a minus 330 favorite. Josh Fremm, +255. DraftKings Kapilov's 9,100. Fremd is 7,100. This one is on me to start, and that's good. Look, I'm going to play some of Kapilov. The inside the distance number, it's pretty big. It's a play both sides type of fight in GPP. I think of Josh Fremd as a, I'm going to be referring to him all week as a fraud checker. Now, granted, he lost to Trayshawn Gore. Well, it's not great. He got caught in a submission, but he beat Cedricus Dumas, who I still think is a fraud. Like, I got that one right. It's more that Josh Fremd is a decent, well-rounded mixed martial artist. Roman Kapilov has shown himself to be really one-sided, like really one-dimensional. He's going to have trouble with grappling and clinch work against the cage. If he can't get in space, he's in a lot of trouble. And we've seen it in his last few fights. And the more I watch it, the more I'm like, someone is going to take advantage of this. I know Kapilov is trying to improve and get better, but just it's just his takedown defense, it's just not there. So the problem is Josh Fremd, while he's well-rounded, I'm worried he's going to test out his striking in this fight. And I think that he thinks he'll be okay there. And that's why I'm picking Josh Fremd. If you stand in space too long, I won't be able to live bet Kapilov because he'll be a big favorite and Fremd will be unconscious. But there's a clear path here for Josh Fremd. It's the grappling, it's the clinch work. And at this price, I'm taking a shot here. Your DraftKings lineups. Play some of Kapilov in GPP. The betting wise, that number on Fremd, it's a stab against Kapilov. Until I see him well rounded and sprawl or dig an underhook appropriately on the cage. Anybody who can grapple, I'm probably going to lean that direction, especially at a big plus money number. So leaning towards Fremd to pull the upset. I understand the upside in Kapilov. The dude's a better striker with good power. It's clearly there. Just the old adage: styles make fights, and if Josh Fremd displays fight IQ, I think he's got a real good shot to pull the upset here. What are the numbers telling us, Monk?
I like Kapilov overall. I mean, landed that head kick against Ribeiro. That was an incredible head kick. But his only good score in the UFC is against Puna Soriano, who might have a negative ground game. He put up 108 points there and was basically able to do whatever he wanted because Puna posed no threat at all of going outside of Kapilov's comfort zone, which is the striking. So I don't really like Kapilov for GBPs, even though I probably think he wins this fight more often than he doesn't. So I'm going to go with Josh Fremd at 7,100. This is also happens to be another case of I'm desperately searching for dogs this week. And I think this is exactly what you said. He poses somewhat of a ground game upside here against Kapilov if he is able to get it done. I mean, Kapilov might not be able to get up off his back if Fremd lands just one takedown. He could look, you know, sloppily dominant this whole fight if he keeps Kapilov on the ground and he keeps busy enough to not be stood up. That said, I might, in retrospect, I could be looking back and realize that I was reaching for straws by going for Josh Fremd because I really do think Kapilov is talented, but he's also older than I always think this guy's like 25. I think he's like Chase Hooper's age, probably because he looks almost exactly like him. He's not. He's 32 years old, so I'm leaning for Josh Fremd here. Like I said, I like Kapilov. I think he probably wins maybe 55% of the time, maybe even 60. But I'm going to be leaning Josh Fremd pretty hard on DraftKings over Kapilov. He just doesn't score well enough ever. I mean, 93 against Ribeiro and 80 against Alessio Di Carrico. Also, he got subbed by Carl Roberson. Yeah, that's bad.
That's not great.
Yeah, that's
and on
it.
That
that's,
note.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Now we got Edgar Chaires. He is a -220 favorite, taking on Daniel Da Silva or Lacerda or whatever the fuck he's listed as wherever. Chaires -220, Da Silva Lacerda +185, Chaires 8,700, Da Silva Lacerda is 7,500 on DraftKings. I mean, a lot of numbers to break down in this fight for you, Mike. Not a lot of wins from either guy, but a lot of numbers.
Yeah, these two are 0-5 collectively in their UFC careers. Do you know what Lacerda's nick?
If you include Chaires's contender series fight, it's 0-6.
0-6. That's true. Do you know what Lacerda's nickname is, or rather, do you know what it means? His name is Mioche. I don't remember how it's pronounced, but it means ramen noodles. His nickname is yeah, it sounds good. His nickname is actually Rom. Just thought I'd throw that out there for you. His at distance pacing, but look, I don't need to go into the numbers here. Sherez's fight needs to be thrown out because he was fighting Tetsuro Taira. He didn't do shit. You might not have to throw it out, but he didn't really do anything against Tetsuro Taira. His at distance pacing, he doubled up Tetsuro, but that is really his only good set, other than the fact that he did land a knockdown in that fight. He only controlled 4% of the total grappling time that he was involved in. He was also 6,600. He is now $2,100 more than that against Lacerda. Lacerda, I mean, say what
he
you want about it.
He got doubled up by Taira. I think you had that backwards. Taira landed more strikes than Chires.
I don't know. I mean, maybe per minute, maybe on the ground, he was, maybe a lot of those were inside the distance strikes, either in the clinch, on the fence, or on the ground.
I'm trying to do the Lord's work for you here. Let's see here. Let's share my screen. Pop this up for everybody. I'll pull one of these.
Yeah, so Taira landed 26 at distance strikes and 25 for he landed 35. He landed 35 ground strikes, so that's kind of why it's thrown off.
Taira landed 61 at range.
I know, but 25. No. He landed 61 strikes, significant strikes, but 35 of them were ground strikes. If you look on the down one and all the way over to the right.
You're talking at range.
Yeah. At range, Chera's outscored Taira, but inside the distance, Taira made a fool of him.
With 25 strikes.
Yeah, though. Exactly. Exactly.
I got you.
That's what I mean. We kind of got to throw this stuff out for Edgar Chires. He looked terrible. Lacerda, I mean, he's very dangerous for like a couple minutes, basically 2 or 3 minutes. Also, he puts people on the, he's put 3 out of 4 opponents on the optimal lineup. Only Lil Figgy didn't make the optimal lineup, but that's because he didn't do shit and still managed to finish Daniel Lacerda. He literally landed like 5 strikes. Figgy did. He had no control time. He had no takedowns at all.
It was a 1 minute fight, though. That was a sub in 1:18.
Yeah, but and then Figgy, he only gave up 90. He literally gave up the bonus, and that was it. Other than that, he's given up well over 110, 111 points per loss to all of his opponents, Jeff Molina, Altamirano, and Vergara. Vergara doesn't score well against anyone, and he dominated Lacerda. So I like Chires. I like actually both sides for DraftKings. I'll have a ton of it. But I do like Chires way more just because Lacerda, all he does is lose and put people on the optimal lineup. That is all he does. Every single week, there is a spot where people are like, I love this guy. Last week, it may or may not have been the pleasure man. And every single week, we look back and that dude got fucking dominated in 1 minute, 2 minutes. I think this is this spot this week. And I like Chires for the early finish.
Are a lot of people picking Lacerda like I am?
So many people are picking. So many people are picking cool. Daniel Lacerda to win.
Well, I'm gonna go. I this week feeling better, thankfully. So have not listened to many other people yet. So, if you're telling me that, maybe I'll have to think of another kill shot because I was gonna be all about Lacerda. If you tell him he's gonna be chalky, but the reason being to get to the breakdown for myself is Edgar Chires. You know, to finish somebody, you have to punch. And you could say Figueiredo, but Figueiredo landed a sub, but I don't think that Chires is going to get a sub here. Lacerda, I think, has got a big grappling advantage. And that the pace and pressure, I think, is going to get to Chires. That's why I'm on the Lacerda side. Chires, in his contender series fight, 3 full rounds, 51 significant strikes. That is not a good pace. That was against Clayton Carpenter. Against Taira, who's taken down twice. Carpenter took him down 3 times. Lacerda gets a takedown. He's aggressive enough. He's probably going to finish you, unless you can sweep him or land a sub like Figueiredo did.
If he doesn't get caught in the guillotine set on the way down.
Possible.
Sure is.
That is the problem. That's why while I'm picking Da Silva, it's not a cash game play. There's a lot of upside on Chires too, because this fight is going to be wild for as long as it lasts. I understand that. I just, when I see the fight play out in my mind, I just see the pressure of Da Silva being the problem for Chires, and I don't think he's going to be able to handle it. Like, let's see, Lacerda's losses, you know, not for nothing. The strength of schedule on Daniel Da Silva, not bad. Like CJ Vergara is, you know, CJ Vergara is 4-2 in the UFC. You got Victor Altamirano, you know, he's 3-2 in the UFC with losses to, with his last loss coming to Tim Elliott. Like, solid UFC fighter. Francisco Figueiredo, I think that one is a little sus. That one, that one I have a hard time defending. And then Jeff Molina is Jeff Molina, who's 4-0 in the UFC. Like, his strength of schedule is not bad. And he got, and there's a reason he's getting another look here at 0-4 in the UFC, because he's so exciting. I think there's some potential there. I hope he wins too, not just for the pick, because then we get to see three more wild ass fights with bonuses. Like, sign me up for that madness. I will say, just to recap, you can go ahead and play both sides in GPPs. Totally get it. But for me, the straight up pick is going to be Lacerda. All right, let's talk Tracy Cortez and Jasmine Jazz DeVicious. Cortez is -115. Jazz DeVicious is -105. Cortez 8,200. The comeback on Jasmine is 8,000. I have to excuse myself for a minute. Let Monk go first, because I can't get a Jasmine Jazz DeVicious fight fucking right. I can't do it. I physically cannot do it. And there's your disclaimer. So while I gather my thoughts, Monk, what do you got for this one?
I'm going with probably my final underdog on the card here, or my first underdog, depending on how you look at it. And I'm taking Jasmine Jesu DeVicious here. She just for the DraftKings upside, neither woman scores fantastically well. So I'm just automatically looking at the dog, even though it's only $200 difference. I'd like to save that. So both women are high-paced grapplers. We both know exactly what they want to do. And my biggest fear is when we have grappler versus grappler, is those two styles just stalemate each other and we get an extremely boring stand-up fight between two grapplers who are just stuffing each other's takedowns. Nothing scores worse than that. Absolutely nothing scores worse than that. We've
seen it so many times.
Yeah, give me the fade. This is one fight, and there are not many fights on this card that I am fading. This is actually one of them. But if I do have to pick a side, which I do, and I will be rostering a little bit, I like Jasmine Jesu DeVicious, not only for the DraftKings savings, but she has more upside than Tracy Cortez. Cortez doesn't even 10x when she wins. Jasmine, her average value per win is 12.5x. So give me the upside for Jasmine here. It's simple as that.
I mean, a good news for you. I'm on the Tracy Cortez side. She is 5-0 in the UFC. She's been in grappling exchange matches back and forth. She's never not landed at least two takedowns in a UFC fight. I don't think Jazz DeVicious is, a great stopping takedowns, although she did stop Miranda Maverick last time out. This does have that type of feel of a fight with two grapplers who end up standing. And in that type of fight, I probably favor Jazz DeVicious. I just think at some point they're going to get on the ground, and I think Cortez is the better BJJ practitioner, more likely to find this submission. I can't fade the fight because, A, they want to grapple, typically, and, B, they're right in the mid-range. I can't get all the way away from this fight. I can understand being under to it. For me, I can't quite fade it. There's another fight still coming that I want zero part of, and if it burns me, it burns me. But again, I think Cortez has got the edge in the grappling, and that gives the nod for the fight for me. Not a fight. I think it's a pick-em for a reason. I think it's lined appropriately. Just kind of roll. I think Cortez is slightly better, but I've been wrong about Jazz DeVicious time and time again, and there's your disclaimer. Let's talk Campbell, and let's talk Reyes. Campbell, the -550 favorite. Alex Reyes, +400 dog. Campbell's 9,300. Alex Reyes is 6,900. And, oh joy, I get to go first for this fight. Not incredibly thrilled. Can anybody tell me who exactly the fuck Alex Reyes is? Because
I got knocked out by Mike Perry. That's all I know.
I've seen Charlie Campbell fight this decade. I haven't seen Alex Reyes fight this decade. No one's seen Alex Reyes fight this decade. Dude is now 36 years old, coming off a 6-year layoff. He's 0-1 in the UFC, where he was knocked out by Mike Perry before Mike Perry was a thing. Yeah, there's no way in hell I can pick him. Charlie Campbell, look, he got knocked out on the Contender Series against Chris Duncan. If you watch Contender Series or even highlights, you've seen the meme. He had Duncan hurt bad. Duncan throws like a UFC 50. I'm hurt. I'm going to throw something. And it actually lands, a total throwback kind of thing. Campbell gets caught, gets finished. I still think he's a good striker. I think he can mix it in. He clearly has power. I have no faith in Alex Reyes. Give me Campbell. The prices are a little scary. And I'm not going to say jam Campbell into all your lineups, but on no planet will I let Alex Reyes will I invest in him? It just one of the spots where if he beats me, he beats me. But who the fuck are you, bro? This smells like who do we see relatively recently come back after not fighting forever? Matt Wyman getting slammed by Jordan Levitt. Like, oh yeah, that's right. You're a million years old. Like that's what this smells like to me. So give me Charlie Campbell and I'm not gonna overanalyze it. What about for you?
Yeah, I might even speak for fewer seconds than you did on this one. It's Charlie Campbell. I love him for cash. I put zero stock into, I keep waiting to say Dominic Reyes, Alex Reyes, who someone told me was his brother. I don't assume that that's true, but that's what they were saying on the show I did last night. Either way, 6 years is a ridiculous time off. I mean, his fight with Mike Perry lasted, I don't even have that in front of me. He got, I think, knocked out by Mike Perry, like you said before.
It is Dominic Reyes' older brother.
It is not, oh, his older brother. So if Chin's running the family, just X this dude out of your lineup for sure. Also, I mean, not only 6 years off, but he took 6 years off because he had infected stem cells injected into his spine. The dude was actually paralyzed for a while, had to reteach himself how to walk. You know, it's a fantastic story, and I'm super glad he recovered, and he seems to be 100% recovered if he's going to fight. That said, I'm not going to roster that guy in DraftKings. I'm not going to bet on him. So it's Campbell all day at 9,300. He could probably be more expensive than Rosas in this situation, or maybe at least more expensive than Panny. So we might be getting a deal on him at 9,300.
Move on to the last fight. We're going to talk about the first fight of the night. Josephine Knutson, -800. Bart McMahon, -550. Knutson, 9,500. Mann is 6,700. I mean, you got to have a lot of good stats on this one, Monk. Take it away, all you.
Oh, yeah, a lot. So many. I mean, first of all, it's a women's strawweight fight where one of them is -800. What are we doing? That's crazy.
We need to fight. Oh, shit, we need to fight. Yeah, right. Lucinda fell out. Oh, God. Mark McMahon.
Who's that girl that we didn't sign off Dana White Contender Series? Let's get her in here. She only scored 71 in that Dana White Contender Series fight. If you put scoring to it, 98% grappling time is what she controlled. So that's good, I guess. Marnik Mann, from what I hear, is really bad. She's also really short at 5 feet tall. I think Newsom's going to win here. I don't think that this is going to be much of a contest, but I don't think that I want much of her at 9,500. This probably goes to decision. She probably scores 75 points, and I probably don't want to have anything to do with it at 95. I'd rather pay up for Raul Rosas at 96. And I'd rather save $200 to get Charlie Campbell in my lineup over Newton. So I don't really see a spot for her in my lineups, even though I do love the $9,500 salary. And again, 6,700 has like a 4% win rate since 2021. So there you go.
Yeah, if this fight beats me, it beats me.
Yep, I don't want any part of it.
Like, sorry, Knutson, I think you're good. Although I was going to pick Lucindo against you, but Knutson is... What was also sick about this fight is that whenever I watch Knutson fight, she's grinding somebody up against the cage. And that's probably what she's going to do to the smaller Marnik Mann, who got head blast kicked in the next century by Bruna Brazil. So, yeah, she's in a road to UFC fight where she landed 34 significant strikes and 4 takedowns, I will say, in a win. And then Contender Series, 53 strikes, 1 takedown. 9,500 is too much. Marnik Mann's no good, but I can't pay that. It's so bad. I think Knutson runs wins comfortably to the point where I would play. If they had like a -4.5, -5.5 points line, I would probably take it.
Oh wow, yeah.
I think she's gonna win all three rounds.
Yep.
Like or 10-8. Well, we win all three, and that's 3 30-27s is 9 is the way that prop works. But that being said, I still think Mann's the better DraftKings play because at least I could pay up other places. And women's MMA, maybe something stupid happens. Like that's how little I can get behind 9,500. Even all your math on 6,700, I get it. But yeah, no, thank you.
Nope.
No, thank you. Kill shots. We got to talk motherfucking kill shots. I can't go. Oh, shit, that was loud. Sorry. We can't go with Daniel Da Silva Lacerda. I'm being told everyone's picking him, and you can't eat chalk on a kill shot. Typically a dog, an under-owned play that you think will cash. Before we give away the kill shot, I'm going to ask one more time. If you didn't hit that like button, do it now or fuck you. No, sincerely though, please, please do that now. Helps out a lot. Drop a comment. Let me know who your favorite fighter is for the card. Monk, you got a kill shot queued up?
Yeah, I've got, I mean, we, you could flip a coin and guess which one I'm going with out of the two or, you know, 2.5 dogs I gave you. So I'll go ahead and pick Christos Giagos. I mean, I already talked about his numbers. I already talked about his upside. And we already talked about the young age of Zell Huber, the inexperience. I know he's got 14 fights, but that is a lot for 24 years old. It makes me wonder if he's just crushing cans. His strength of schedule would kind of say so, but not, you know, maybe a little, you know, half of one, six dozen of the other. But Giagos, much better strength of schedule. His losses are to Armin and Moises, and he's bald and bearded, man. Of course, I'm going to pick him. So give me the Spartan, Christos Giagos, as my kill shot of the week, $7,400.
Well, I picked three dogs straight up. One I just disqualified off the rip. You just took the second. The third is my kill shot, Josh Fremd. Going, everyone's like, Roman Kopylov is great. Well, did he learn to grapple? I guess we're going to find out. I'm going to go with Josh Fremd in the case that he cannot. That's what we got for you guys for UFC Noche. 11 fights. Make sure you're playing everything on DraftKings. Make sure you're in DFS Army. Go hit those. Go join us in there, guys. All kinds of good stuff for all sports. NFL is in high gear. NBA is coming. The fall and winter. I hate the fucking weather, but I love the sports. So it is what it is here in the Northeast. Monk, you got any last thoughts for UFC Noche?
No, looking forward to this one. I think we got one more card until we get a week off. So, yeah, and it's turning fall, man. It's finally getting cooler in Texas. Maybe I can watch these fights outside for once this weekend.
Yeah, it's maybe here. A few months outside will be like a place I want no fucking part of. I can't tell you how much I hate this snow. Do a whole
That's
podcast.
Where Texas is going to pay off, baby. No shoveling right now, for me. Let's go.
110 degrees. You cook eggs on Monk's driveway, probably.
Yep.
That's what we got for UFC Noche. You guys, whatever you're doing, whatever you're playing, betting, DraftKings, good luck in those contests. Hit the subscribe button so we can see you next week. Have a good one.